Welcome to Golau, where we shed some light on politics, policy and polling in Wales and the world. This episode is one of four, featuring presentations from the Wales Governance Centre's Brexit One Year On event, held in the Senedd on, when else, the 23rd of June 2017. In each one of the Centre's experts looks at a specific aspect of Brexit from a Welsh perspective. In this episode, Ed Poole looks at the economy and asks, Brexit, where are we now?
A year after the referendum, the pace of political developments is right now so scattergun, rapid and unknowable that we sometimes forget to enjoy some of the simple pleasures of British politics that made us all interested in this strange business in the first place. But this week we actually had one of them. And anyone who watched the Queen's speech or has opened Facebook and seen all the memes generated since the Queen's speech saw Dennis Skinner's fantastic Royal Ascot zinger to Blackrod's command to the MPs to attend Her Majesty when he said, get your skates on, the first race at 2:30. And actually, when I thought about Blackrod watching that clip, I thought that that was an absolutely brilliant metaphor for the challenge of Wales and the rest of the devolved administrations in getting their voices heard in this process. And none more so than in the area of the economy. If you run a kind of thought experiment for a moment, imagine you were a senior or mid-ranking official in DECSU, the Department for Exiting the EU. You've just lost half your ministerial team a week before the Brexit negotiations start. You've got the Chancellor of the Exchequer and the Home Secretary trying to change the negotiating script the weekend before Brexit negotiations start. You're going up against an incredibly united EU27 team under a real professional like Michel Barnier and his co-negotiator Guy Verhofstadt, who is adept at throwing well-timed bombs into the British political process on this. And so what is it going to take for the devolved administrations to get their voices heard? It would be really easy if we shared the same view. And the DUP, perhaps some of the ease in which they are getting their voices heard, is because other than the soft border, their objectives for Brexit are broadly in line with the Lancaster House speech. Scotland, we've seen 12 Conservative gains in Scotland, so for the time being, Scotland's voice is perhaps a little weaker. But time and time again, Scotland has shown its adeptness at the art of realpolitik in the United Kingdom. Actually, the way for Wales to get its voice heard is only through loud, continual banging on the door. Because if we don't do that, our voice is simply not going to be heard. And in this presentation, I'm going to show you why it is so incredibly important. And we often talk about a Team Wales approach, and it sometimes is a bit cliched. But actually, in the next 18 months or so, if Wales as institutions don't work together, we are going to find ourselves in a very difficult position. And that, I think, includes also the Wales office, includes the Welsh Government. This week, I noticed that the Wales office has been more interested in perhaps in defending the DUP deal than in saying that Wales needs a very strong voice at the Cabinet table. And I think it's going to be really, really incumbent for there to be a real, real shift in the next 18 months about how all of the politicians and all of the civil society and all of us in this room approach this problem. Because there are going to be some real challenges, there remain some very, very significant budget questions. There remain challenges over the repatriation of competences, over agriculture, over environment and over regional policy. And perhaps even most importantly is what is the impact of the Brexit deal going to be on the Welsh economy? And particularly in this continual debate, it seems, at the moment, about what degree we're going to be in the customs union, the single market, really has really enormous effects on the Welsh economy. This is a really interesting table because it just shows the scale of the challenge facing Wales. Not overcomable, not unovercomable, but certainly a challenge in itself. You can see here the main two budget programmes which Wales receives and all of the parts of the EU receive from the EU budget. Common agricultural policy spending and the structural funds, the regional funds, primarily for West Wales and the Valleys, but also European Social Fund and other structural and other regional funds. And you can just see the extent of the difference between the spending per capita in Wales and other parts and other devolved countries compared with England. Common agricultural policy, almost £100 per head on a policy that is actually well designed for the low profit agricultural industries of Wales, upland hill farming and so on, compared with less than a third of that per head in England. And you can see that whopping difference on the structural funds. Just £13 per head spent in England, a little bit more in Northern Ireland, not much more than England in Scotland, but a massive £83 per person in Wales. Here's another chart that just shows the per capita spending on the regional funds as well, and this is from the Sheffield Political Economy Research Institute, and it was in a report by the Senedd Committee that just released the report this week on this. And you can see, you know, just the enormous difference in the benefit from regional funding, and that's why before the referendum, me and my colleague Gitte Ivan released a report indicating that Wales was a net benefiter from the European budget programmes, despite the large contributions that the UK makes into the European budget. So, to focus on these two areas in particular, and then moving on to the economy, in agriculture, Wales have been allocated a little more than €2 billion in the current funding round. And because of the low profit, perhaps, in the agriculture industry in Wales, more than 80% of farm income in Wales originates from this EU funding. Under all models for a Brexit settlement, whether that's a soft Norway-style settlement, a Swiss settlement, or something harder, funding for agriculture comes from domestic sources. But we know that agriculture is a devolved matter, and we also know that there's been increasing divergence in agricultural policy on a whole range of issues between Wales and Scotland, often on the one hand together, and the DEFRA position on the other. And so the Welsh Government here has been advocating to replace the JMC structures with a UK Council of Ministers that would be a more equal forum for deciding on the common rules and frameworks. But it's very, very unclear, to say the least, that the UK government would agree to such a framework in which the devolved administrations would have relative equality at that table. The policy-making capacity post-Brexit is really enormous, and it's something that we really haven't begun to consider yet. Very, very significant regulatory requirements, some environmental considerations, such as rules on pesticides, animal welfare, and so on. And perhaps the volume of this compliance burden is perhaps why so many farmers voted to leave the EU. It really is an extremely red tape-filled sector. But compliance with these standards is what gives access for farm products into the single market. And that is going to be incredibly important because Welsh food and drink exports to the EU were worth almost £300 million in 2014, and that's more than 90% of exports from Wales. Less than 10% of food and drink exports from Wales go to non-EU countries. Now, of course, there's an argument here. Well, you know, let's go out and get some trade deals, try and get that percentage up. But if it seems likely one of the first trade deals is with New Zealand, actually the Welsh hill farm will face some very, very significant competitive challenges if there's no quota New Zealand lamb imports. So it's really going to be a double-edged sword, and keeping access to the EU market is going to be incredibly important to keep those that level of exports coming in. As I mentioned, all of the options, alternative options for UK-EU relationships involve some sort of domestic funding. So Wales is going to have to be banging on that door very, very hard to get the interests of its very particular agriculture industry heard. On the other major policy area, regional aid, we know that Wales is a really strong relative benefactor of this area. More than 20% of funding is available. All of 20% of all EU funding to the UK, it ends up in Wales. And Wales, and to a lesser extent, Northern Ireland and Scotland, are subject to very significant levels of funding here. But in all likelihood, funds are going to have to come from domestic sources. And this week's report by the Senedd's External Affairs and Indigenous Legislation Committee, you know, challenged the Welsh Government to make the most to perhaps rethink some of the aspects of regional funding in Wales that haven't perhaps been so successful. But likewise, you can only have fresh thinking if there's funding available. And so again, this is going to be an area where the Welsh Government is going to have to be very, very loudly banging on the door to make sure that Wales's interests are heard. There are some models, particularly the softest type of Brexit, the EEA model, where cohesion funding could still potentially come from European budgets. But if we don't go for the Norway model and adopt something more like the bilateral model of the Swiss deal, there's no cohesion funding in that approach. So again, the UK government would be likely to be the provider of any such regional funding. You might know that the UK government, along with agricultural funding, the UK government has guaranteed funding for projects up until the point at which the UK leaves the EU. And in the Conservative general election manifesto, although the extent to which a number of those manifesto projects were conveniently excluded from the Queen's speech this week, so we don't know the status of this, but they proposed a United Kingdom Shared Prosperity Fund to replace the European structural funds. This is designed, quote, to reduce inequalities between communities across our four nations, but the design was very, very unclear. And it also doesn't indicate whether or not there would be Welsh Government priorities or Scottish Government priorities included in this, or whether it be UK-determined priorities for the use of those funds. The economic impact is again, an unknowable. When we were putting together these slides, it's amazing that the more things have changed in the past year, perhaps the more things have stayed the same. We still really don't know the impact of the post-Brexit settlement because we don't even know, you know, what settlement really the UK government is going to want by the end of this process. What we do know is that Wales has a very much more goods-oriented economy than England does. And so the single market membership and particularly the customs union are of more importance relatively to Wales than they are to the to England. I can show you here, I think I have no laser, but if you just have a, if you're able to see, London is about halfway down. This is the shape of economic activity and the industrial patterns across the United Kingdom. And you can see manufacturing is that orange bar towards the right-hand side of each of these regional profiles. Wales is three from the bottom. And you can see that orange bar is actually relatively important for Wales's economy. Whereas if you go three bars ahead of that, north of that to London, just see how little, for obvious reasons, perhaps London manufacturing is to the London market. Moving across on that London bar, the yellow bar being finance, the purple bar being business support services. These are what drives the London economy. That's far less the case. You see the size of that finance and purple bar for Wales a few bars below. So because the customs union is about free trade in goods rather than services, it's actually of relatively greater importance to Wales if we're able to continue to have access to that market. And also the final point is that we are moving into a period when Wales is going to be more reliant on our own taxes We have got income taxes coming in 2019, and in fact, the very next Welsh Government budget is going to have the first Welsh taxes for 700 years with stamp duty and landfill tax. And so if we have a Brexit deal that has differential impacts across the UK, we could actually have a double-edged sword of a hit if we have an economic hit on the one hand in terms of jobs and the economy, which puts less taxes, which we're increasingly self-reliant on for the Welsh budget, and actually have an impact on the public sector side as well. So we're going to have to be very, very careful about making sure that the industries that Wales relies on are going to be respected and reconsidered. And I think the only way to do that, knowing the sheer difficulty in the Dexu position at the moment, is to loudly bang that door and make sure that whether or not the UK government wants to take Wales's priority seriously, that we make sure that they are listening. Diolch yn fawr iawn.
We'll be making a video of this presentation available on Cardiff University's YouTube channel if you would like to review the slideshow. Thanks for listening to Golai, a Cardiff University podcast. Subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from to have the next episode download automatically.